Welcome to the Bengals Beat Podcast, presented by JosephAuto.com and Inquirer Sports. Here, every Tuesday, your Cincinnati.com Bengals beat writers take you inside Paul Brown Stadium for the scoop on all things Bengals. Hear from players, coaches, and anyone else relevant to the team throughout the week. Remember, you can subscribe on iTunes and Google Play or listen on our must-have Bengals app. Let's go.
All right, welcome to the BBP, Paul Ener Jr., Jimbo Sersky, your Cincinnati Inquirer Bengals beat writers. Mini camp has come to an end, and we are here to wrap up everything from the off-season program because everybody's gone.
Yeah.
They have taken off.
Yes, yes.
Not us, though. We stay behind.
That's true.
For you, for our BBP listeners.
Yeah, no, it's a welcome break. I mean, think about it, because this team started voluntary workouts in April, right?
Mm-hmm.
And almost everybody showed up for those. Now, granted, it's like, a couple days during the first part of those weeks in April, and then the rookies showed up after the draft. Rookies have been here the entire time. They're staying actually a week after this, the end of minicamp even. So, it's a much-needed break.
Yeah, for them, for the coaches, for us, yeah. We'll take a quasi break, sort of.
Right.
But before we leave, of course, we want to get into sort of what we saw over the last few weeks. I mean, what we see is minimal as far as value. I mean, right. We're talking about a bunch of dudes out there running around in shorts and. You know, right. Outside of coaches yelling at certain guys.
Right.
And there's only so much you can take from it. But we did see 12 hours worth of practice over the last 6 weeks.
Right.
So there's a little bit to be taken from. I mean, there's definitely stuff happening
right
there in developments. But for the most part, I would say, I think it's fair to say, before we jump too far into this, barring something crazy, this team looks to be in pretty good shape in general. Entering when they show up for camp at the last week of July.
Yeah,
Eifert is really the only thing out there.
Yeah, Eifert's the only thing. I mean, Ryan Hewitt isn't or did not participate in the spring, but from everything I've been told, he'll be ready for camp. Non-football related issue. Cedric Obuehi early. Sat out of drills, but by the end of the mini camp was participating fully.
Mm-hmm.
Jake Fisher, same thing. He missed, I think, the last OTA. Didn't work out initially in the mini camp, but then he finished doing full reps. So, I mean, things always carry over in the NFL. It seems like there's always something guys are dealing with at some point, especially in the spring. But, no, you're right, Paul. I think Tyler Eifert is the only big question mark. Now, granted, 85 is that's a big question mark for the offense.
But I think they feel like they have a handle on what he's going to be, going to be at. I mean,
right. Everybody
knows he's going to be back, you know, somewhere around they hope to have him for the first game or maybe the second or third, somewhere in that area. I mean, I think everybody's comfortable with that.
Right. So, yeah, healthy.
Pretty healthy, pretty good shape, no major things. In fact, off the field, I mean, there's no Von Miller, I'm not playing for the team in 2016, no Muhammad Wilkerson stuff. I mean, that stuff isn't out there.
No.
They're doing the opposite. They're locking guys up.
Right.
So, you know, I think the team, as far as all those types of things that can go wrong during camp, didn't go wrong for them for the most part.
No one got hurt in camp.
No, they came out of everything pretty healthy and with no major controversies or anything like that. I want to run down a little bit of what we want to try to get to during the pod today. You know, I think one of the biggest things you can talk about is receivers. We'll offer some of our thoughts on that group of young kids. Linebackers are an interesting conversation piece right now.
Right.
Those playing, but more importantly, those not participating. And, you know, we've talked a little bit about it on previous pods, but the defensive line rotation, some interesting stuff from multiple sides, kind of disagreeing with each other a little bit. Coaches, I think there you can see a bit of a difference of opinion happening within the organization. We'll bring you some of that. I do want to get into the extension of Giovanni Bernard, which I wrote a little bit about, obviously, last week and why that's happening, and get into sort of who's next, because very interesting comments from Marvin Lewis, pretty openly saying, hey, we're hoping that's not the end of it. They're still working on more extensions before the year's up. Of course, we have some news that we want to get to. Joint practices finally announced, but I think we all pretty much assumed that was going to happen. We'll get a little bit into that, the details of it and what to expect. I got a teaser. I got a teaser for people of what we're going to be bringing you over the dead period over the next month. A really fun project that I think you are all going to like. All our podcast fans, I think, will be pretty pumped when they hear about that. So I will get to that at the end of the podcast. But for now, let's jump into some mini camp observations. Let's start at receivers. Because that is the position where maybe you can get a feel for some things. Receivers versus DBs, one-on-ones. Right. You don't need pads on and all that stuff to see who can go get it, who can go make plays in the passing game, and who looks good. No one of the – everyone wants to talk about the young guys because they're all – here's what, like right. seven or eight of them that are all about the same that are young and inexperienced and looking to stick out. There were a few guys that popped a little bit, but for the most part, I didn't see anybody that kind of jumped off the page at me as far as, like, every day you were saying, look at that guy making plays again. Did you feel that way?
No. No. Yes, I felt that way. No players were jumping off the page. So, yes, I'm agreeing with you. That was a weird way to say it. James Urban and Ken Zampezi very early, even Andy Dalton very early said Tyler Boyd, that's going to take a minute because being a slot guy.
Yeah.
And again, yeah, you can tell. I think he showed he's quick. You know, he can kind of get himself to a spot, but when someone's got their hands on him, which they couldn't really do, you know what
they
I mean?
Couldn't
so,
do.
No, so.
I mean, it wasn't
so
like
I saw
you noticed.
Some quickness. Yeah. You know, out of time, so, which is what you want to see. You don't want to see a guy they said, oh, third round pick who's. You know, second round pick who's fast and then he looks slow. You know what I mean? So, honestly, Paul, the receiver that stood out, I guess, would be Alonzo Russell, the undrafted kid out of Toledo.
Yeah.
And when I say stand out, it's because he was undrafted. So let's put that in the context, folks. I'm not, it's because it was like, who's this dude? Looks the part, long. Caught everything. I mean, some of the other guys, other undrafted guys, had some issues with catches.
A lot of guys had issues.
Yeah,
with drops.
So let's not. Don't take me. Take that to a whole. Osarski
says Russell starts week one. Put it down right now.
No,
you're putting yourself out there. Touchdown.
He hasn't left over touchdown Jesus yet.
No, of course not. Of course not. And Kumaro has continued to look good, but we talked at length with James Urban, and. Who is the most popular man on campus right now? I mean, he is sought after. It's like Hugh Jackson is back here. Media just surrounding. Everybody wants to talk to Herbs. And poor Herbs, he can't shake us because he popped his Achilles.
Right.
So he can't even run away from us.
Nope, he can't.
He can't shake us. But everybody wants to know because it's the most intriguing thing about this team. I think everything else is known. I think... Look around the defense. They brought everybody back.
Right.
They added a couple pieces. You know, there's not a ton of intrigue there.
No.
Offense, the line is back. The quarterback is the same. The running backs are the same. I mean, we already know the answer to Tyler Eifert questions. The only thing that you can say about this team right now is what is going to happen at receiver. And, I after watching these practices – I find myself a little more concerned than I was before because I thought we would see one or two guys consistently flash in minicamp when there is no bump and run, when it's just you're running free.
Right.
I mean, AJ Green was AJ Green doing, he's definitely unguardable when you can't even get up and press him.
Right.
Tyler Boyd looked like a guy that needs to figure things out. I mean, and then there was a guy here or a guy there making a play one day, and the next day they disappear for the next couple. I saw Mario Alford drop a ton of passes.
Yeah.
Incredibly inconsistent. And then make one incredible catch down the sideline and be able to show his speed and spurts right. too. It wasn't a for me, it wasn't a great camp for Mario Alford. If there was a takeaway for me from the receiver group, it was that it was a rough stretch for him. And I think he's going to have to earn his way back in camp in a big way. I some people that were waving the flag might not be waving it so boisterously
right.
After seeing a lot of those bad drops.
Yeah, and I know Brandon LaFell was the sort of the big name signing on offense. Right?
He was consistent. Yeah, I mean, he was a guy that's out the there thing. Was fine.
It's like Carlos Dansby because it's hard to be like, oh, what do those guys look like? Well, they look like the guy that you've seen for the last 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's so uninteresting, but yeah. it's kind of what it is.
Well, that's what they need him to be.
Right.
And, you know, I kind of have been getting into this discussion a lot. There's a lot of downtime while we watch punting right. and
yeah.
kickoff practice. But a lot of discussions revolving around the receivers. And one thing that has been brought up to me was, I mean, how hard is it to replace 88 catches when you're talking about Marvin and Moe? And maybe in this league, you would say it's not, but that's not even my concern, is the catches. My concern, how do you replace an possible injury? Are we to believe that A.J. Green and Brandon LaFell are going to play
right.
every snap, play every game, and not get hurt? Probably not.
No, because A.J. Green was dealing with a back issue at times last year.
Sure, and obviously the previous year
right.
had injury issues, a lot of them. And Brandon LaFell isn't a young pup, but and not saying that he's going to get injured, but injuries happen out there.
Right.
And where this team goes after that is a concern.
Yeah.
If you were missing one or, you know, for their sakes, God forbid, two, I mean, where are you going?
You know what this
Tater.
You know, he's in the mix.
He's in the mix.
You know what this sounds like? We could probably splice in the podcast when we were talking about the tight end situation last year. Remember?
Yeah.
Tyler Eifert, what if he gets hurt? Uzama and Croft have no snaps. What happened? And then, you know, go figure Tyler Eifert played the whole season for the most part.
Well, until the end.
Until the end.
And
when
Tyler Croft was able to make a
right.
bit of a contribution.
So it's sort of, yeah, look, and obviously if A.J. Green goes down in training camp or between week 1 and 4, I mean, they're
18 can't go down.
No. Yeah.
This is 1 year that they need 18
right,
to roll.
Because honestly, if that would have happened last year, I think everyone in the offense would have been comfortable with Marvin Jones filling that void for
Marvin Jones and
of time.
Mohamed Sanu playing
right,
with
yeah.
a cast of other guys behind him.
Yeah.
You're not as scared of that
no.
as you are of, well, Brandon LaFell's the one and Tyler Boyd's a two and Tater's a three.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Right.
What are we even talking about at that point? You know, you're certainly counting on Tyler Eifert, who's
right
already hurt. So
yeah.
I there's just to me it was a raw group, and I did not see an emergence of even one of those group of kids, and that's unfair probably because it is their first foray.
Right.
I mean, it's their first mini camp. How much can you really do? But you know, you would have liked to probably have seen a little more from just one or two guys
right.
to kind of stand out a little bit.
I guess if I have to stretch a little bit, because I'm sure people are listening to this, like, oh, my God, they drafted Tyler Boyd and Cody Corn. They didn't do anything. Both of them, even Cody Corn, got work with Andy Dalton with first-team reps. So, like, you know, A.J. and Brandon LaFell obviously had the first of the first team, and then they rotated out. What does that mean? Probably nothing other than the fact that, almost to your point, Paul, where it's like, on one hand, they'll say we don't want them nor expect them to be major contributors, but on the other hand, in practice, saying they need to run routes with Andy Dalton
yeah.
and know that he gets the ball out in 2.5 seconds, so you better be where you need to be ready to catch it. So I thought that was interesting. Not that they would have been relegated to the bench anyway in such sort of limited time where you're not trying to stress anyone, but You're right, though. I mean, I couldn't sit here and tell you either of them were, you'd say, feel real good about, you know.
I thought maybe the most encouraging thing out of the wide receiver core happened in the last 2 days when James Wright showed up.
Yeah, that was interesting.
I mean, he showed up only working an individual, running a few routes on air, with wearing his brace, but I didn't expect that. I didn't think see him until training camp. And, you know, talking around, they said that was an important thing to him, to get some payoff for all the work that he's done, even if just a little bit, to go get out there and just be a part of the team for a second.
Right.
You know, which it wasn't a ton of work, but it was out. It was 86 wearing a jersey out there running around. He could be encouraging. I think people forget, and it was before you even came here. It was the last time he played. I looked up the date. It was November 30th of 2014 was the last time he played, was when he injured the knee.
Yeah.
It's a long time ago.
It was.
And that we were still talking about this injury. So he's had a really solid rehab. He appears to be ahead of schedule to even be out there. So I think they got to be feeling pretty good that come camp time, he might be even maybe full go week on day one.
Right.
So he could be a guy that could definitely be in the mix. Sadly, he has more experience than almost everyone. I mean, the guy who has 5 receptions in his career, he's like the 4th most experienced dude.
Yeah.
So, I mean, anyway, that's sort of the synopsis of the wide receiver. Don't go freaking out, people. Don't go calling your friends and say, BBP saying blow up the Bengals receiver corps. No, it's minicamp. It's OTAs. Let's see after a few weeks of training camp where this battle stands and who shows up at camp feeling confident. I mean, these guys, you go into a job, I don't care what job you're in. If you showed up at the Inquirer, I mean, did you show up day one like, I'm ready to write a takeout feature on Marvin Lewis?
Right.
I mean, you kind of did, but you didn't. But you didn't. Couldn't start it until you got acclimated to where you were first.
Right.
You know. I mean, it was. It takes. You had to go and meet people and say hello and figure out the lay of the land and get comfortable, and then you get some level of comfort, and then you're able to start doing your thing. That's true in any job. And the same way with these guys. I to think that they're going to show up in the NFL and start toasting Adam Jones down the sideline
is
unfair.
Too, right?
But maybe they feel acclimated after the offseason and they show up at camp ready to roll
because
they feel comfortable.
Yeah, and I am curious to see Boyd and Core specifically coming back because, honestly, Paul, this is their first downtime since when? Before their last season of college football?
Yeah,
Jeremy Hill talked about that. His last year at LSU was like, okay, you're done. Then it's combine training, then it's other training, and then it's right into – I mean, these guys –
And you're stressing constantly about the draft, and then you're a new guy, and you're trying to impress everybody. I mean, to just have these weeks, these 6 weeks to just
– study the playbook and
– relax.
Yeah, get off your legs.
Rest and not stress. So, yeah, that's where that's at. Let's dive into linebackers here real quick. Ray Maluga and Vontez Burfict were in attendance.
Yes.
During all of OTAs, for the majority. Ray missed the first couple of weeks of OTAs, but he was there all the last few weeks.
Yeah.
Vontez Burfict participated some.
Yes, he participated in one OTA.
Yeah.
And
that we saw.
We were only allowed to see one. And then I believe he participated on the first day of minicamp.
First day of minicamp. And then the next 2 days of minicamp just sort of ran on the side. In fairness, a lot of vets took the last 2 days of minicamp off.
Andrew Whitworth didn't participate for the last 2 days.
Yeah,
Jones was off.
Yeah,
It was a
there's a
large
lot of that.
Group. Yes,
I mean that's part of the deal. These vets, they don't. It's pretty unnecessary for them.
Right.
If you've been out there long enough, I think that's part of the case with Burfict. But Maluga was different. And so everyone said, what's going on? What's wrong with them?
Right.
Well, no one wants to really talk about that outside of saying they will be fine. They will be good to go come training camp. The word that's out there, Bengals analyst, radio team analyst Dave Lapham, as he's wanted to do it on the radio, used the term, quote, grossly overweight.
Yeah.
Was the quote that was used on radio. I think that's been part of the equation for Ray for a while. Not the use of those terms.
Right.
But dealing with weight. I mean, he's constantly been up and down, and coaches have, even back to 2012, even they've talked about trying to get him to down to a certain weight to play. It's always just been part of the equation with him, and it appears that that's part of what it is today. But it is purely speculative. No one's out there saying Ray weighs this, and this is a problem. No one wants to say that. They just want him to be ready for camp, and I think everyone's okay if he's conditioned and ready to go for camp.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, Paul, because when it comes to Burfict, he talked to me after his OTA appearance, and I don't know. I mean, I had never seen him practice because last year at this time he was recovering from microfracture. So in my opinion, in those 11-11 drills where he was causing fumbles and deflecting passes and otherwise being Vontaze Burfict, to me, he looked running at the same speed and as everyone else in the sense of were they going 100%? I don't know, but he didn't seem slow.
No.
You know, and then even in that first day of mini camp, again, the same thing. There were no turnovers or anything. But again, I don't recall, you know, him dropping into coverage and losing guys. You know what I mean? So it was strange to me. Look, he's not rehabbing this year. He talked about that. He said it's nice to be able to have trained for football and not rehab.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what the guy said. He participated a couple days and didn't the other, but he also had microfracture surgery and has knee issues.
Yes. So there's no reason to be putting a pounding on this dude's knee during an OTA or a minicamp, especially when you have other young linebackers you'd like to get in the mix.
Right. So I guess where I'm at with that, Paul, is, look, Lapp works for the team. He's around the team. He says what he says about a lot of things all the time. Could have been opinion. Could have been educated opinion. All up until minicamp, everything was voluntary. Ray and Tez were there, not participating. But again, no injury reports. So if I sound wishy-washy to the BBP listeners, I guess I am, because to me, they're there. The coaches are happy that they're there and not having just like skipping. And everyone at this point says they will be ready to go. I guess we'll just have to see.
If
that
they're
first
not,
day of camp and they're not ready to go, then it's like, hey, guys, you said this wasn't an issue in April and May, and
why is
July
it still
30th,
an issue if it is?
Right.
That to me, that's it. And you know, you learn so much day one of training camp.
Right. Yeah, right.
You really do. That will be one of the most important things that we learn is, are Ray and Vontaze out there? Are they running on the side trying to get conditioned? Where are they at? Expectations are that they'll be out there and no one will care. And certainly no one will be talking about this in the middle or end of the season if they show up day one and do as everybody expects. I don't think anybody really cares. Be a little bit throwback to the old days, right? You get yourself ready during camp, you know, for the season, and it's kind of a body training zone. You'd be a throwback in that way. I want to move it to the defensive line, and then we'll get out of the mini camp observations. We have talked quite a bit on these podcasts in recent weeks about Margus and Will Clark.
Right.
And particularly it was in connection with the possibility of Dwight Freeney signing.
Right.
If you want to hear a bunch of information on that, go back and listen to the last podcast. I'm not going to rehash everything on our feelings on Dwight Freeney and where the team stands on with that. There is no update on that since the last podcast, and it probably won't be. It will be sometime in July or August if it happens.
Right.
But the interesting element is all this talk about rotation and the need to get to a defensive line rotation. And those four guys need to be moving around in and out. And Jacob Burney, the new defensive line coach, has been pretty adamant about the want for that. The want for the younger guys to contribute more and be part of but you want them to contribute, they got to play more.
Right.
Particularly at defensive end with Margus and Will. Will going into his third year, Margus going into his fourth year. So, on the other hand, he'll say, but that's on the coordinator. So you go to the coordinator, and the coordinator says, offensive linemen don't rotate.
Right.
I play the best guys.
Right.
And if you're not good enough to play, then you're not going to play. And there's only so many snaps that can be taken. I want to win. And you get all of that. This team did very well during when Mike Zimmer was the defensive coordinator, and particularly around the 2011, 2012, when Dunlap, Geno Atkins, Michael Johnson were young and up and coming.
Right.
And not necessarily starting, but working into some of the guys that had previously been with some of the guys that previously been here. With getting that deep rotation, it was very helpful to them in the long run. The question is, are they at, do they have that luxury now? Should they give the those guys luxury? Do they have to give those guys a chance in order for them to actually produce?
Right.
And I don't have a problem with there being a difference of opinion, but I do find it interesting that there's a difference of opinion.
Yeah, and I mean, you could argue that's one of the reasons why there was some change on the defensive coaching staff and Paul looked for other guys, because, look, Jacob Birney, I mean, he coached Reggie White. You know, that's how long this dude's been in the game. He knows his stuff. And he believes what he does in that, where he's like, look, if you want the, you know, Paulie G loves his thoroughbreds. If you want those thoroughbreds down the stretch, maybe, you know, he's up a little bit in the early part of the game. But he also understands, obviously being a longtime coach, that, you know, what third and eight in the second quarter isn't as important as third and eight in the fourth. And
exactly.
You know, so that is the balance. I guess, Paul, to me, you know, we've said this ad nauseum, I guess, a little bit, with, we got to wait to see pads. And I guess that's the luxury the Bengals have. We mentioned this with the receivers. You have an all-pro left tackle. You have Cedric Obuehi, young, but who they believe is going to be really, really good at right tackle. You've got really good guards. Let Marcus Hunt and Will Clark go.
Yeah.
If they can, in practice, if they can win against those guys, I think, and maybe that's what Paul means, maybe that's what he needs to see.
And in preseason, you know, games. I would expect Carlos Dunlap to play very, very little.
Same with Michael Johnson.
And Michael Johnson.
I think you have to put
Marcus
out there.
And Will go out there and play with the ones and see how they do for the first half of every single game. Because they've proven they can go out there and win against the future insurance salesman of the world.
Right.
But can they go out there and beat the other teams once? And including when they have these joint practices with the Vikings and stuff like that. I just, you know, it's a big time. And how they do in those games will be the determining factor to how many snaps he gives them. Because Gunther is not going to put them out there if he doesn't think that there is, if he thinks there's going to be a significant fall off.
Right.
And in his opinion, clearly based on action, he has felt that there is a significant fall off to them from what was there previously in previous seasons. Right. I mean, that's why neither of them played more than 15% of the snaps. You can cite injury and all that you want to. They were available for a whole lot of those games and inactive.
They were.
I want you to be able to listen to a little bit of Bernie and Paul Gunther talking about these two in particular and the rotation and all that goes along. I just think the two paired against each other is interesting. So here's defensive line coach Jacob Birney, and we'll follow it up with defensive coordinator Paul Gunther.
I think you're going to stick four out there, and they're just going to play, you know, those 85 plays for you and play winning football in the NFL. That's not happening. So you got to get more than that ready to play. You got to get seven ready to play, you know. And then you can't be afraid to put them in there.
So, is it tough to do that when you have Geno and Carlos? And you have especially three guys, Michael, that are established, high, you know, all pro, Pro Bowl, to really stick to that rotational aspect when you have guys who are so dominant?
It's not tough for me, because that's the way I've done it. What you're working for. You know, so yeah, it is hard to stick to, and you know, the emotions of it. And, oh, I want to see that guy out there, but that guy, his tongue is hanging out. And he may be out there, but he's taking his rest on that one play that you need him, because he's been out there for the whole time. That's just how it is, especially when you're talking about big guys. DBs, they can play all day long. They love guys. Big guys, you just got to roll them guys.
I mean, these guys played a lot of snaps.
Oh, ain't no doubt. Huh? Ain't no doubt.
Yeah.
It is.
I mean, leading with, you know, shit. I mean, they're fifth guy out there.
I know, and that is hard that way, right? But then you look out there and you say, how come it's late in the game, how come the guys ain't hustling to the ball? Okay, well, it's late in the fourth quarter, he done played 75, 80 plays already. You say, well, you know, he get paid to do that. You know, that's what he's supposed to do. Well, that sounds wonderful in a cool of a room or a living room.
But after about 75 plays, then he's giving you all he's got, and it's not enough to win. No matter how good he is, when he's fatigued like that, he can't play winning football. You know, so when all of a sudden now you need him to run to a screen, he's not running. You need to run to those short passes or those outside plays. He's not running. Because he know you're not going to rest him. He got to rest himself. So, no, I don't believe that's the right way to go.
So you got to play. You got to have at least seven playing.
Yeah, you do. You know, I'm D like coach. I like to take 2D. But they don't hard to do that.
Yeah, you want to take 8 in the game.
Yeah, I want to take 8 in the game. They don't hard to do that.
Nobody does.
But yeah. Huh? Nobody well, every so often, you know, they'll get a little fired up. Yeah, we're going to take you 2D. It might last a game ever so often. But yeah, it's 7.
Is it a thing where is there a need for in regular season games to have that deeper rotation? That's kind of been a thing that Bernie's talked about a little bit. I mean, is that, you feel like there's a need to do more of that, or is it?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you want to keep guys fresh. You know, you got to have closers at the end of the game, so you got to keep guys fresh. So there's a lot of different ways to get to that. I mean, maybe you put a guy who's not a D lineman up in the front to rush in an all passing situation. You know, so there's different ways to look at it, but I think, you know, there's a lot more made out of the rotation. I mean, you don't talk about rotation in the secondary or rotation with the linebackers. It's the front guys. You know, they don't rotate offensive linemen. So, yeah. But like you said, the best guys are going to play, and if the guys who are backing up can go in there and there's not a drop off, it's better for our team.
Well, last year, at the beginning of the year, you kind of gave Will a pretty big chance, and his snaps fell off towards the end of the year. Was that just a thing where you just weren't seeing enough at that point? And need to.
You know, I mean, it's just like, you asked me that question. Why don't we say, hey, why didn't Eric Winston play more snaps at O-line?
Right. Because he's not as good.
Well, I'm just asking you. Well, we don't talk about a rotation with the O-line, but the D-line is such a big deal.
Yeah.
I don't understand. So, I mean, the best guys are going to play, and if we have 5 best guys or 6 best guys, they're going to play the most. You know, that's
just got to figure out where that cutoff is for you.
Correct.
Of who is who, correct. Where it doesn't drop off, correct. And where it does.
Right, and the backup guys got to raise their levels. So, and the more they raise their levels, the more they'll play.
Yeah,
some would say the 5th and 6th guy would be better if the 7th, 8th guy plays more.
But the thing about we always had a rotation, but I know it's such a big thing with the D line.
Yeah.
You know. But no other position on the field.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, that's just the way it is, right? Yeah.
I guess.
You
say so.
But why you guys can be able to put into that rotation and be able to, as you said, produce when you're in that rotation.
That's right.
So
that's right.
Why.
That's right. Yeah. So if I'm a guy that gets, I know my role on the team is to play 10 snaps. It may be a safety, it may be a D lineman, it may be an outside line, a nickel linebacker. If my job is to play 10 or 15 snaps again, I better do it at a high level.
Yeah.
Or we're gonna, because you're a specialty guy at that point, so you gotta make sure it counts. That's your role. Like I tell the team all the time, I'm gonna put the abilities in the spots. We got a lot of different abilities, so I'm gonna put you in spots that is good for your ability. So you got to make those snaps count. Otherwise, we may not do so many things.
All right, so there's all our mini camp observations. It's really enough. I know people get excited, and we get all the how's Jeremy Hill look,
right.
Or how's Russell Bodine doing?
Right,
they're out there. Okay, right. They're running, and right. No one's allowed to touch them.
Yeah,
you know, it's like running backs, offensive linemen. It's like, you know what? They look really good when they do the blue 88 set hut drill.
Yeah,
where they're standing on the side and they practice standing up and shuffling their feet.
Yeah,
looks great. Turned the corner. No doubt. Yeah. I mean, our good friend Mo Egger did the old mini off-season storylines that everyone will blow out of proportion, because that's what all anybody can do this time of year is blow out of proportion. We can tell you the things that we've told you about, who's running with certain groups, what we've talked about with the linebackers, who is maybe flashed a bit with receivers. That's the stuff that's important. But when you start getting into, are they developing on the interior or what? I mean,
that,
you
honestly,
know,
Paul, it's because this is a good team again.
Right.
Honestly, I look, if this was Cleveland or Oakland or Jacksonville,
there's a lot to
I think there's real things you can draw from things like this. But look, you know who these guys are. And this even goes back to the linebackers. Ray Maluga is a base run stopper who runs downhill. He's got a limited, like, in reality, what do you need him to do?
run downhill, stop the run,
and knock out offensive linemen.
Yes, right.
You know what I mean? I mean, Tez would be the only issue because of his mobility and wanting. But again, he proved he could do that. So it's
95% of the starters, right, they're the same.
Right.
The only area of intrigue is the receivers, right, and we went off for 15 minutes on that. And there are things to gather there.
Right.
But to
there's no reason for panic or freak out.
There's no reason for anything. Everything, and Marvin, for as much as he often is condescending to us and, likes to just say things to shut us up, is not necessarily lying when we ask him questions about players and he says, you can't judge it. Don't judge it.
Right.
He says it over and over again. You can't judge this. Which, by the way, we really need to do the MC Hammer. You can't touch this. If you are out there listening to the BVP.
Oh, my God. You will get the biggest of all shout-outs if you can make this happen.
If you can take the Marvin Lewis face, put it on MC Hammer's body doing the typewriter dance, and just get a can't judge this to come across the bottom. I want it moving. I want it.
Oh, yeah. Like them great. Yes. Like those great Draymond Green, yes, like punching LeBron in the nether regions.
This is what we want.
Photoshop.
I want five vines to 10 seconds of can't judge this. If you own a recording studio, if you could record a dub of this, we will send you our audio of Marvin Lewis saying can't judge this, and you can insert it into the MC Hammer song. Anything, if you're listening and you have ability in this, we are serious about this.
Yes.
We want it bad. And you will get so much love on the internets, on Cincinnati.com. And we will push it out to our app for everyone to see. Because we want this so bad. But he's right, though. You really can't judge. I wrote about CJ Uzomah last week. And trying to get from people. Everyone says, he looks great.
Yeah.
He does. Because he should. That's why they drafted him in the fifth round, because he's a 6'6", 271-pound, rangy, athletic, freak type guy. Right. But can he get out there and be physical and be good enough to be a tight end? You don't know until he actually is asked to go out there and be physical and be a tight end. So things look good, but time will tell whether he can help cover the Tyler Eifert hole. You just don't know. So that's where we're at with that. Let's move on. And so we saw last week Giovanni Bernard got an extension. Surprisingly, I didn't see that one coming. But Gio gets a deal for 3 years for 15 and a half. You just don't see running backs get extensions with the teams that draft them.
No.
You just don't. I'm trying to remember the numbers off the top of my head from my story. You can go back and read it. It was the headline was Bernard, extensions rare on many levels, and it was, I believe, it was about 3 out of the last 64 or so draft picks.
Yeah,
check my numbers on that. That were running backs between 2010 and 2012 had received deals with their team that drafted them.
Right.
The rest were all let go and not signed. And some were big names. I mean, we're not talking about necessarily nobodies. It's just what the position is. It's just people don't like to pay them the second deals. And the Bengals, I think, got a guy. The way they use him is helpful to why I think you can project longevity. And I think they'll get prime years out of him. I don't think you'll see depreciation much during the span of his contract, signed through 2019. Maybe in the last year, you would be a year where you would start to see guys like that. But guys like Sproles, Forte's still been out there doing it on a high level, and he's way older.
Yeah, way more touches.
Guys that get touches not between the tackles as much and are able to get out into space and be shifty and limit some of the hits, get out of bounds, things like that, and be explosive. Those guys have a little bit more longevity.
Yeah, well, what was interesting, at least for – and now this is all fleeting because it is the NFL and the next contract is always the next biggest one. But as of recording this BVP, when he signed his deal, he's the 10th highest paid running back in the NFL.
Yeah.
For a guy who doesn't start and plays half the snaps or a little more. You know, let's assume Jeremy Hill kind of reverts to form. You know what I mean? It's interesting. And in that top 10, I think Ezekiel Elliott's the only rookie. So, you know, so if there's other first-round picks, that'll obviously push him down as the years go on. But to your point, Paul, it's they did. It was like a true investment. It wasn't like, hey, here's this kind of low-ball offer, and he took it because he knows the market's weird. I mean, they paid him.
Yeah.
10th highest paid running back in the NFL.
No doubt. Because he showed up and has done everything the right way. He has been very good on the field, particularly last year. I think they felt like they found his role last year.
Yeah.
Like they found the sweet spot of when Gio can be great and be an asset, where, you know, how you can use him, getting him out, catching balls, but still giving him some touches in the rushing game.
Pass protection.
In that spread with when they have the receivers out there and Andy Dalton's in the shotgun and Gio's next to him, he's dangerous because you're spacing out the defense. He's a good pass protector. And now they've got – the defense has to account for this guy that can come out of the backfield and kill him in open space and catch the ball really well. So they found that, and he ends up, you know, averaging 4.7 a carry and 9.6 a reception, both career highs by long shots.
Yeah.
And with fewer touches than he had in the previous season where he struggled, where they tried to kind of make him a workhorse back.
Right.
And that's not really what he was. So that role, that – sweet spot, there is a lot of value in.
Yeah.
And look, they're willing to pay that.
You know, his last play of the year got a rule change, so, you know, he'll you know, he won't have to worry about that out there anymore, right?
No. Yeah, you can only hope until someone else hits him from a slightly different angle and they need a reinterpretation of the rule, which that just continues to be a debacle as we now have the Porter rule in place. I mean, unbelievable. We're now on
it's a whole other podcast to talk about.
It is. I mean, it's amazing that there have been this many rule changes or interpretations or alterations or admitting of just complete fault of the four biggest plays in the game.
I know. It's amazing.
So now assistant coaches are not allowed onto the field, otherwise known as the Porter rule. So that tells you how they feel about that story. We had the Shazier rule is now in place. The reinterpretation of the Shazier rule. We have
Sean Williams
was flagged,
but then they said, "Oh, we messed that up."
That was wrong
during the game.
Told him that during the game, and then they said that Martavis Bryant's catch was incorrect. Those were the points in the game.
Yeah, exactly.
those were the points scored. Martavis Bryant's touchdown was the only touchdown that Pittsburgh had. And they scored the game-winning field goal off the coach being on the field.
Right.
And they took away 3 points from the Bengals on Shazier's hit. Not even talking about the fact that the Bengals could have kicked a field goal.
Right.
It was a turnover.
Right.
Sorry.
I know. We just destroyed all these people. They're like, okay, you know, we're feeling all right about minicamp.
The Bengals will be good. And then, but do you remember that day? The worst day? Did you forget? The pain, the anguish, the hell. Remember? Well, the NFL says it was all unjust. And then Rod just sitting there smoking a cigar in the corner. My bad, guys. You're right. So Giovanni Bernard's extension, we cover that. Who's next? Is the big question everyone wants to say, because we have Marvin Lewis saying, hey, talking a little bit about what we talked about, Giovanni Bernard was just a guy that just did everything right and was fantastic, has been great in every way since he's gotten here, and is going to continue to be. The way they used him is a big reason why they wanted to give him this money going forward, because they feel like there's longevity in him. And then went on to say, and we've got a few more guys we're working on, and we're hoping to get some more done. So let's get into who those are, who those should be. Yeah, I think the main candidates we can pretty much tag down, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
the first two to start with would be the two guys playing on their fifth-year options. You know, right guard Kevin Zeitler, cornerback Drake Kirkpatrick. And largely because they're the biggest numbers on the table.
Yeah.
You know, Gio Bernard and Sean Williams, while we could say they're surprising and they're nice deals for them, you know, they're kind of buy low and hope for high, you know, on the Bengals sense. And obviously they get some security. But yeah, Dre and Kevin Zeitler are guys who, you know, the baseline's set now with that fifth year option number. And then they just so happen to play some positions that this past offseason, the deals that were signed across the league at corner and guard, like, holy cow, really changed the game in terms of cap structure and total dollars and, you know, average per value, all the things that matter to players and guaranteed money, all that stuff. I mean, so I think we should start there just because those are the biggest numbers and guys who, frankly, if they left, are starters.
Yeah.
You know, and unlike Marvin Jones, because there was AJ Green, like, these are guys who there's stuff in the pipeline, but, you know, it's, you're back to the question mark of could they do anything. So it's, yeah, here's our starters in their prime.
Yeah, I mean, if Zeitler, if we're talking about Zeitler, I think he's, him and Hewitt maybe would be the two most likely.
I think so.
To happen?
Yeah, yeah. We neglected to say Ryan Hewitt initially. The team really likes him. You know, he's a restricted free agent to be that number low.
And he's the ultimate buy, get in early, yeah, buy at a bargain type. Because you can get in earlier because he's so young.
Right.
You get more prime years.
Right, exactly. And because he was a college free agent, they can do this earlier. They want to do it. Look, both sides want to get it done.
Mm-hmm.
Right there, it's honestly, again, people, the average per value matters because if he were a restricted free agent this year, the tender is $1.6 million.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's some wiggle room there where I'm sure his representation is like, hey, if he was this, he'd be getting this, or he'd have to go. So there's some, you know what I mean? So
look to the Burfict deal because I mean, the Burfict deal is the best example because he was an undrafted guy. They counted what would have been, okay, here's what the Bengals said, here's what we could do, pay you your 600 or whatever,
right.
you count that, count next year as even the second round,
right,
a second round valuation, which is like, what, two or three, yeah, probably, and then we'll start talking about how much you deserve after that,
right,
and take all that together and front load it for you.
Right.
So you can get money now, but you're getting the same amount of money in the long run. You know, you're getting more money in the long run, but you're getting now, so you don't have to sit here and make this base minimum for being an undrafted, right, free agent. I mean, that's how they do it, and that's how you get guys through their prime years at a pretty good bargain, and, you know, everyone goes away happy because the player just wants the money now because they just want that second contract.
Right. So, yeah, so you were right to bring Ryan Hewitt up. I do think on the list of four guys, we'll get into that fourth in a minute. But Ryan Hewitt, for sure, I think will get done.
You think?
Yeah. I think that will get done. And then I think Zeitler's interesting to me, Paul, because we brought up Pittsburgh. David DeCastro, same class, playing under the same fifth-year tender. They've opened negotiations. You know, does he match the ridiculous $10 million a year contract Oakland gave, I'm going to butcher his name, Kalichio Osemele.
Osemele, yeah. Well,
if DeCastro, I mean, that could either push the market way forward or teams realize, hey, Oakland had to hit the floor, so they had to overpay a bunch of guys.
But no, here, I've got an opinion on this because hot take time, cue the hot take alarm. It's, in my opinion, what you're seeing, and particularly for this Bengals offense, the interior offensive lineman's value is trending up so much more and the outside tackles trending down a little bit because of the quick passing game in the NFL, which no one utilizes more than the Bengals' Andy Dalton, and Dalton ain't going nowhere.
Right.
No one gets the ball out quicker than Andy Dalton, so where are you most often worried about the pressure coming
up
from?
The middle.
Right up the gut, and Kevin Zeitler has been a big reason why they haven't had too much problem there, and Clint Bowling as well, who they give a very nice deal to, considering where he had come from. So I think they're willing to pay him, and I think teams are willing to pay more to guards now and less to left tackles. Well, tackles in general. I won't specify left or right. A little less to tackles in general. Not that they're not still very valuable. I don't think guards have passed tackles yet, but I think they're willing to pay more because of the rise of importance of the interior lineman and quick hit passing game. That's just been so successful all over the place.
Right.
A team like the Bengals, Kevin Zeitler is a huge part of your future.
Right.
And I think that they recognize that. The question is, obviously, how far are they willing to go
right.
before they just say, you know what, let's see what the market says.
Yeah.
We don't think that the market is going to say what you think it says.
Right. Which they've done. You know, they took that, they kind of rolled that. George Iloka bet on himself. A year ago this time, we thought he was a top priority. Marvin Jones, same thing. They're like, we'll see how it plays out.
Mm-hmm.
Both those guys got paid. And the Bengals actually were willing to pay them both.
Yes.
So, you know, it's a win-win, I think, for Zeitler in that sense. I think he's a guy who wants to be here. You know, he gets along with everybody. It's unlike, say, Marvin Jones, you know, guards aren't really going anywhere to make a name, to be the guy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think, you know, I think basically if the numbers are in – look, he views himself as an upper-tier guard, pro bowler, who's been snubbed, kind of like Whitworth. That's his mindset. You know,
that's only one way to be
right.
to know that.
And you mentioned the tackles. Look, right tackles are on a rookie deal, right? Now you go to your left tackle, who's yep. also may play out a contract for the first time in his career. Told us, hey, I'm willing to stay. I want to stay. I'm willing to move inside if need be. You know. That's an interesting one. And I think Andrew Whitworth's also interesting because he's a guy, I think, one of the rare players, as they showed last year, this team would extend in season.
Yeah.
I don't know how many guys on this team they would afford that to.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Very, very few. The Whit one is interesting. I think that they would like to just continue to go year to year as much
right.
as they can with him. But as long as he continues to play at the level he's playing at,
right.
you want him around. He's
right.
such a huge part of the fabric of this team.
Right.
And you know, I just think that means a lot. And especially if he's now openly saying, I'm willing to move inside now.
Right.
And if that means extending a career, you should, I think the team understands his value. And until they see any kind of drop off,
right.
I think they're going to want to continue to play. So there's a chance that could happen. The other guys, we'll see. I think we kind of went through some of the best opportunities.
Yeah, I think those are the four main ones. I think Hewitt and Zeitler and Dre, for sure, are the three they're focusing on before week one.
I'd be pretty shocked if Kirkpatrick got done.
That's the one.
They have much more of an out now with Will Jackson being
right.
selected. I think it might have been different if they ended up taking, you know, insert receiver here in round
right.
one and not having yet another young corner come in. I think they would be more interested probably in locking Dre down in the future. But now, you know what, Dre? They want to see you get a little bit better
right.
before they go and pay.
Especially with Adam Jones locked up on the other side.
Right. I mean, they're already paying a lot.
Right.
And Denard, I mean, there's a battle there. If a battle plays out and by week 16, Drake or Patrick ends up your fourth, not saying it's going to happen, but there's four first round. I mean, there's
right.
a lot of first round picks there. If he ends up your fourth guy, you know, then that's a different way that you would evaluate them. And then you got to start thinking about Darqueze Denard. What if he comes on and he's a stud this year?
Right.
Well, he's up soon.
right.
So you now start talking about him as a long-term guy.
Right.
So I think they probably are more wanting to wait and see one more year with Kirkpatrick. And in the same respect, I think Dre would want to wait
yeah.
and go play well because, let's be honest.
He's looking at Janoris Jenkins money.
Yeah, money's out
what?
There. You,
yeah.
go, you go play well as a corner, somebody's going to pay you
yes.
a whole lot of cash.
yes.
So, you know, there's nothing wrong with waiting. Let's move forward, and I want to wrap up a few items here. Joint practices with the Vikings,
right.
August 10th and 11th, the 2 days just prior to the first preseason game on the 12th. If you are – camp schedule should be released. Usually it's traditionally been the first week in July, the last 2 years anyway. It's been that first week in July. They've put the full training camp schedule out. I think now that they have Minnesota finalized,
right.
They're probably just – dotting some I's and T's and
right with
lowercase
odd J's. Weekday preseason games, and then there's like a Thursday into a Sunday night.
Yeah.
So they have to
work some stuff out. And I think, you know, I think we obviously knew that this was going to happen a long time ago. You know, kind of talking around, we kind of got it sounds like this was in the works even before the preseason schedule came out, where I think they've wanted to do this. Zimmer and Marvin Lewis talked so much about how much they love joint practices when Zimmer was here. It's a no-brainer that they would want to work together. Hell, Zim still has property here.
Yeah.
So I'm sure he probably just wanted a few days on his farm to come back out here and hang out. And, I mean, there's a whole lot of former – I mean, Terrence Newman, Andre Smith, Emmanuel Lemieux will all be back. Kyle Wright, Rudolph's from Elder. Going to be a really fun week. If you are coming out playing, you're going to come out to camp. And I highly recommend coming out to camp. It's really good. You know, it's if you haven't been downtown.
The team does a really good job. I was impressed. It's my first year last year.
Right in the middle of downtown. Great views. Just a cool setup down there in the practice fields. It's fun. Great one-on-one with players. There are no days better than these joint practices.
No,
particularly now when you have Zimmer. I don't know if you saw Mike Zimmer when asked about Minnesota Vikings media, if he expects any problems with the Bengals. He said, absolutely not. Those guys know I'll still get after them too. Like, you know, it's no problem for him. You know, he can start yelling at Drake or Patrick just like the old days. So it is going to be fun to see all of that. You know, those days are just great. It's the most competitive. You'll learn more about the team those 2 days than you will going to the game on Friday.
Right.
In my opinion.
Yes. Because
that's when the ones actually go against the ones.
Right.
Whereas they all sit on the benches and the warmers and do interviews on Friday. So I highly recommend if you want to come down those 2 days. Well, the first practice is at 3 on the first day and then 11 o'clock on the next day. But that schedule will all be out, so keep an eye on for that. But I cannot recommend coming out to that enough. I'm looking
Make sure
forward
to holler
to
at Paul Daner.
Yeah, please holler
from
at
the
me.
Stands.
Holler at
BBP.
Holler BBP. Absolutely.
Do a Macho Man voice.
All
you Periscope watchers out there.
Yeah, don't do one. don't do it. No, we will. We're going to be doing the Periscopes and the Facebook Live. Oh. Don't make me snap into a Slim Jim. I don't want to do the whole thing right now. I'm not in season
I'm
form.
I'm just saying.
I haven't been working on my routine.
No, I know.
I
want to
do
I'm
a different wrestler.
Fans. You put out a request for some like convoluted photoshopping dancing
I did.
Things. I just want someone to holler BBP brother at you in Macho Man voice from the stands.
Yeah, I'm cool with that. I'm cool with that.
You just said don't do it.
No. Don't. Ask. I think you guys saying
no.
I need to ask me to do
I
it.
I want them to do it to you.
Oh yeah, that's fine.
Yeah,
that'd be great if you be a whole. If you can come out like a tag team, like the, you know, like the.
Well, then you got to do Marty Jannetty and Shawn Michaels tag team with all the ribbons and.
Yes, come up dressed like tag team wrestlers. That's what I want. That's what I want to see. Bushwhackers. I want you to come up looking like bushwhackers.
Oh, that doesn't take any effort.
If you're walking like that does. Knocking out a couple teeth does. I'm telling you. Anyway, so
fill the bridge.
So we're almost there. So that's going to be the next 6 weeks off, and then we'll be out at camp. It's going to be insane. We're going to have lots of good stuff coming. Between now and then, though, in the dead period, I do want to, for those of you stuck around, unveil what our series is going to be. 2 years ago, we did a look back at the 90s Bengals and all of their glory and so many great conversations with those guys. I just absolutely loved that series. It was fantastic talking about the bad old days and everything that went wrong there. Last year, we did the 2005 team. Looking back at that season, amazing how many similarities ended up playing out over the course of the year. Isn't it amazing? That was crazy. I just, having gone so deep into the 05 series last year, watching the season play out where the Steelers were the centerpiece and you had a quarterback injury and rivalry and the Bengals winning a game in Pittsburgh that made them think that they were the real deal. I mean, it was eerie how many similarities there were to that 05 team. I mean, all the offensive records being broken. Anyway. It had a lot of fun with that
just
one.
Just killing these people in the summertime.
Sorry about that, guys. I know it hurts. Anyway, so here's the optimism, though. This year, we talked, anybody that listened to the podcast series last year, a lot of conversations that came with former players was how the Bengals don't have a Ring of Honor. We broached that topic with Mike Brown at the opening press conference of the year, yep. and he sort of talked about how he hears them. That's probably his fault. It's just not his thing to do that type
he
of thing.
He moved a little bit on that.
He did move. Yeah. He did move. Admitted it's on, that's on him, and he's stewing on it, I believe was the quote.
Yes. It hasn't really aroused any emotion.
Yes, as he said at the at the owners' meeting.
This is a quote from
that
the owners' meeting.
That is not quoting us. He said it aroused his emotion.
Yeah.
No.
I'm just doing everything I can to destroy this for you.
You right really now. Are. You really are. So anyway, so we decided that this year would be a great time to use this. We wanted to talk to some Bengals legends. So how can we do that? Let's do our own four-player induction class into our mythical Bengals Ring of Honor. Who would be our four? And let's talk to all of them.
Ooh.
So I think you probably can imagine a couple people that I've already talked to. But, you know, it's going to be interesting debate. So shout out to us. Who would be your four? You know, send us on Twitter. Let us know. I'm curious who your four would be. Don't worry. There'll be plenty of opportunities to vote and polls and stuff once we get this series all posted up. It's going to start running here once we get into July. And week by week, we will run down our inductees until we get up to the season. And we'll have long conversations with all of them. I think you'll find it very enlightening, fun, good looks into the past, and a whole lot of good debate in the meantime. So keep an eye out for that. That is on the way.
Yeah, which will transition us into an eye on the future at the end of July. We'll have something good for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, so we'll leave it there.
We'll leave it there. I mean, I think just trust me that we have a plan to smack you upside the head as soon as training camp starts with something that has been in the works for a long, long, long time that is going to be incredible. So we're really excited about a whole lot of stuff that we've got going on, plus everything that we're going to do once we get into camp. But for now, we need a little break. A little vacation, little vacay time for us. Obviously, if any news happens, we'll be coming at you. But but remember, just make sure you have the Bengals app because this time of year, it's best for us to just we'll call you. Don't call us.
Right.
Trust me. If anything happens, you're probably not going to like it. And we'll let you know. So we'll have all that stuff for you soon enough. So we got to get out of here. Do you have any good goodbye vacation songs?
There's only one to me.
There's only one I'm out of here song.
Well, I figured it would also be one for you.
For me?
Yeah.
All right. What do you got?
Well, it's at One Dude and DJ Jazzy Jeff.
Summertime?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. It is the summertime anthem.
Yep. Mainly because Touchdown Jesus said it was like summer vacation. So yeah. I was like, summertime.
Summertime. There is drums, please, I would say, is where I'll start with that one because it couldn't come soon enough. Happy. It's been a blast bringing you all this throughout the offseason program. Keep an eye out for the series going forward. But the bell is rung. It's summertime for us. So Fresh Prince, DJ Jazzy Jeff, take us out. We gone.
Slightly transformed, just a bit of a break from the norm. Just a little something to break the monotony of all that hardcore dance that has gotten to be a little bit out of control. It's cool to dance, but what about a groove that soothes and moves romance? Give me a soft, subtle mix, and if it ain't broke, then don't try to fix it. And think of the summers of the past, adjust the bass and let the Alpine blast. Pop in my CD and let me run a rhyme and put your car on cruise and lay back, cause it's summertime. School is out and it's sort of a buzz, but back then I didn't really know what it was. But now I see what happened is the way that people respond to summer madness. The weather is hot and girls are dressing less and checking out the fellas to tell them who's best.
riding around in your Jeep or your Benzos, or in your Nissan sitting on Lorenzo's. Back in Philly, we be out in the park. A place called the Plateau is where everybody go. Guys out hunting and girls doing likewise. Honking at the honey in front of you with the light eyes. She turn around to see what you beeping at. It's like the summer's a natural aphrodisiac. And with a pen and pad, I compose this rhyme to hip you and to get you equipped for the summertime.